Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Off the Post. I'm Russ Cohen, and I'm here with Anthony Mangione. And how are you?
Hey, Russ, how are you?
Doing pretty good, doing pretty good.
Apologies for the late drop-in. My clock was reading like 5 minutes earlier than it was, so my apologies for dropping in late here.
All right, you came in on cue. We're good.
Yep.
Watching a couple of the games out there. And
yes, we are.
The Flyers-Dallas one's an interesting one because I kind of knew the score would be close and knew the Flyers would be in it.
But Dallas is really
Dallas is pressing it now, though. They are.
They really are.
Pressing them for mistakes now. That's the issue.
They really are. I mean, currently shots on goal rating at 42-19 right now in favor of Dallas. I mean, it's withering right now. Philly's currently,
it
I
is.
Believe, coming off a power play right now. So they have a
yeah,
chance here.
Yeah.
In the end right now, if the Flyers have any chance of tying this thing, they're going to need to pretty much everybody's got to basically put the bills in for Michael Nyberg's drinks tonight. Because he's pretty much kept them in
just facing a boatload of shots. And
yeah.
You know, here's the funny thing about Neuwirth. I talked about it on NHL radio this morning. You know, I'm not convinced he's the better goalie than Steve Mason, but for whatever reason, the Flyers are playing better with him in there. But the scary thing about Neuwirth is his rebound control really is still not improved from the old days, and there are just so many pucks out there that they get two and three shots at times on him.
No, they'll get multiple shots, but he does. But what I will say about him is that his positioning is
it's good.
His vertical horizontal axis is really good, which compensates for that. So as long as he's able to have himself in position properly there, I think he certainly has benefited. I think from we've talked recently about the Flyers goaltending coach change with of course Kim Dillabaugh coming in and how much he emphasizes head tracking, and that's something you definitely notice he's doing. But again, rebound control, I mean, it happens to a lot of goalies, but he's not a vacuum cleaner as much as you'd like him to be at times. But he is, his positioning is sound enough and that he's aware enough that he's basically keeping them in position here.
Somebody who is a vacuum cleaner, though, just to kind of switch it up for a minute, probably for 2 years, maybe even three, I forget, I lose track. I've been really pushing for Connor Hellebuyck to really get a shot with the Winnipeg Jets. And, you know, tonight, two goals against Chicago, it was a good game for him. I mean, 29 out of 31 saves. He's really made a case for himself to sort of stay up there and maybe force Winnipeg's hand into trading one of their goalies.
And he might. There's a very good chance of that. I think he's been off to a pretty good early start here. We've liked Hellebuyck for a while.
Yeah.
In terms of the fact that he's the future, you know, we looked at him as being the future for them, and I think in many ways, again, he could force himself more into the picture for the present. Possibly, but I think they're going to be still more inclined to probably have a little bit more data going forward before I think they would make that decision. But again, they drafted, and I think they've always had the intention of him being the guy who would carry the mail for them in the long term. I mean, Pavlich is who he is. Hutchinson's okay.
Yeah, but they still got Comrie too. That's the funny thing. So
and
now
Comrie
can take his time.
No, they've got a nice deep system of goaltenders there. Good stable, like their blue line. They probably need maybe a little bit more help up front, but I think with time, I mean, I love Ehlers.
But he's,
some other things.
Caught up to him a little bit. Like, he's got to start figuring it out, too. That's what happens with young players sometimes. The thing that was disturbing in that game, and I watched it a little bit, the occasional just, like, bonehead, out-of-position play with Dustin Byfuglien, and that's something where, you know, because everybody says, Byfuglien's going to get this huge bounty. And, you know, as a rental, he's not going to get as huge a bounty, I think, as people think. But also, we have to remember, you know, Dustin Byfuglien's hockey IQ has not really improved since the Blackhawks days. It's just that the physicality that he plays with and the way he's able to force play and everything are the good things. But that's still something lacking in his game.
No, I mean, in terms of the fact that he's been swung back and forth too, in some ways it's almost a little bit of Brent Burns syndrome there. I think as Burns is getting bounced back and forth between forward and D.
Yeah.
At this point now, Buffling originally was a defenseman when he first was coming up, and then obviously he had the tremendous success with the Blackhawks, especially during their first cup run against Philadelphia. He was just an absolute horse out there, and I often thought and said maybe. You know, as a big hulking power forward, you know, Todd Bertuzzi type, that he could, or even bigger in this case, that he could have really done some damage up forward. But I do think he's always wanted to be a defenseman, I'm sure. And again, he's switching back and forth. I don't think it's necessarily helped him, but you know, I still think once we say that now, but we get a little closer to the deadline, if a team's getting close. And they feel like they need the elements of the game that he presents. He's going to get a package. And none of that. I mean, I'm talking about just with regards to what he'll garner in return for Winnipeg if they do move him.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There'll be a decent package. I mean, there's no question about that. So the Kings, mm-hmm. we're no longer worried about the Kings, right? I told you I wasn't worried about them all year because they're just notorious slow starters. And, you know, they're pretty much at the top of the Pacific. Like, is this a shock?
Not necessarily. I mean, it's kind of a weird – the Pacific's been kind of a weird division. And
as a whole sucks. Let's be real.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Vancouver's in second at 11, you know, with third – with a minus – everybody in that division is a minus, with the exception of L.A., is a minus differential right now and just – you know, Vancouver, who's sub 500 at home, barely holding court there. If there's a year where you could potentially see an entire division or close to an entire division not make it, I mean, that's the thing. Yeah. The way the playoff system is set up, Vancouver and San Jose still make the postseason. And you look at, if you're a team like Minnesota or even Winnipeg, or, you know, you're looking at this thing and say, wait a minute, we're going to be at, we've got more points than them, yet we're the ones out. So,
yeah.
I mean, and that division, look at the Central, everybody, with the exception of two teams, five of the teams are all plus differentials in that division. But, yeah, LA is a solid team. We knew LA was going to be a solid team. The surprise, again, is the fact that Anaheim has struggled as much as they did. We thought Anaheim was going to be much better than they were this year. Calgary, as we talked about last, when we discussed them before, Calgary – 99 goals against. I mean, for as exciting as that run was last year, it's really they're struggling.
That's the part that's hurting them.
Time.
Their offense is starting to come back. Drew's starting to come back. Monahan's back.
Yes,
but
Yuri
Hudler's not.
It's solid,
like,
but again,
but
when you're giving up nearly 100 goals in this game, 29, that's not going to cut it. They're a bad road team too to boot.
Yeah.
That's the rough part for them right now for Calgary. They got a big hole to climb out of. It's a lot of learning for a lot of those younger players right now, but when things went really well last year for them.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, the Rangers went and tied it up. They were down
3-1. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and people don't like when you say something bad about a coach who's been to a Stanley Cup, but I got to tell you, this is like a pivotal part of Alain Vigneault's career for the Rangers because he's, you know, there's no Klein and there's no Stepan. So with limited people that they can bring up and down based on their cap situation too, the coach has to figure it out. He has to get the right players, push the right buttons, do all those things.
Yeah.
And going into tonight, he hasn't done a lot of that. And now we'll see. But this is a game where you fall behind 1-0 and you fall behind 2-1 and 3-1. And the defense just sagging in front of Lundqvist and a lot of it Dan Girardi. And again, Vigneault just seems like, well, I can't, you know, shake up these pairings too much. So Girardi continues to get a pass. And it's like, you know, at some point, you're going
to
have to do it.
A hard call. No, they're going to have to make a hard call at some point here with Girardi. As much as I like Girardi.
And I like him too. But, you know, we knew the deal would outlive him, but the mileage has piled up quickly on him.
Yeah, no, it definitely has. He's definitely played hard. He's played hard minutes, hard type of game, shot blocker.
Yep.
it wears a guy down over time, no question. Again, going up against a team like Edmonton tonight, who's really sort of feeling their oats right now.
They are.
That also, you know, they're playing pretty
especially
well.
Especially Draisaitl, you know, the German Gretzky, he looks fantastic out there.
Yeah, he really does. Draisaitl, I'm a big fan of Draisaitl. He's strong. He's a strong kid. I mean, we saw that when he was playing in Kelowna. He was just a horse out there. And
strong kid,
tonight,
strong stride for the skating, just everything.
Yeah,
good game.
Yeah, he's got an assist tonight. About 10 minutes of almost 10:40 out there on the ice tonight. So that he's getting some good minutes right now. He's a darn good player.
And you talk about Anaheim, you know, the one thing I forgot to mention about them, it's sort of like they're a team that's just sort of slugging uphill, and while they're playing better lately, just that awful start of theirs is just going to make it so hard for them to make it in the playoffs in the West, regardless of how they play the rest of the way. They can play great, and they could still have trouble.
They can still make – the thing is, again, with that division being so bad
– it's not easy.
No, I mean, in terms of having an easier road to get to the final, yeah, I completely agree. But in terms of them, you know, getting into the postseason, standings shake out where they are. Let's say Vancouver ends up being second place in that division and Anaheim's third. I'm not going to favor Vancouver in that series against the Ducks.
Right.
The Ducks are rolling. The thing is, they'll get into a second round matchup where they can be buzzsawed by LA or Dallas. And again, Dallas right now is buzzsawing a lot of teams. So they're looking like the class of the West right now, which is, you know, I mean, it's still early and everything, but they've been really good tonight. And Dallas Dallas is up 3-1 now. Because we were talking, so that should probably ice things up here. Empty netter by Nickel, 1907 by Jamie Benn. So that's Tyler Seguin. Seguin has the assist on it, and that should ice it for Dallas.
So here's the thing. I looked it up, and goal by, you know, Jake Voracek was like November 14th, but actually, he's gone on a run from October 8th and through this game
of just having
that one goal.
That's, again, that goal's an overtime goal. That's a 3-on-3 goal. That's not even a regular.
That's
not a standard 5-on-5 regulation goal. Yeah.
He is missing the net.
Technically, power play goal. Actually, I stand corrected. Power
that's
play
right.
goal. So 4-on-3.
He's missing the net a lot. He's missing it in practice. He's missing it shoot around before a game.
Yeah.
He's missing it in game. And then tonight I did see for the first time Giroux sort of getting frustrated with him, he's almost vapor locking, not sure where to go on the ice. Like there's something going on with him as far as mentally that he's got to fix in his game, because it's nothing physical. Like, he's still skating well, he still can shoot, but there's a mental part of his game now that's a little deficient right at this moment.
Yeah, no, I think he's playing with no confidence. I think you want to look at it and just say flat out, there's just no confidence to his game right now. And I mean, the last game that I covered, talking myself and Bill Meltzer were both talking about this, and we're just saying, he's like, dude, he just early in the game looked like he wanted it, and then it was like second and third period, he did not want to be involved. It was really kind of, it was like, I don't have it again, and he's really sort of scuffling right now. And whether or not it is a case of, again, looking at that contract extension and having to
live up to it,
having to live up to it and everything. Well, you sign the contract. You know, you have to there's got to be those moments where you got to sort of suck it up. And he's just struggling. He's never been, again, I always go back to this before, and I said this on when I was talking with the guys from Blue Shirt, Union Blue Radio in Columbus before the Flyers played the Jackets. At home, and I said to them, I was like, Jake just seems absolutely snake bitten. He's never been a prodigious goal scorer. He's always been a playmaking type winger, but now, the fact that he isn't cashing in goals, I think, is affecting all areas of his game, even though that technically isn't necessarily his game. The problem is, again, he gets put on a line with Bellemare and Vandevelde, and he's expected to be the finisher on that line. That's not
his role.
His game per se. He gets goals. His goals, and if you ever watch his shots, he almost scoop shots, and this is something that I noticed this, and Bill and I were discussing. Bill was one of the first ones to mention. He's like, he's not like a slap, a hard slapper. He sort of scoops it off the ice, and I'm watching some videos of his goals, and it's exactly right. He doesn't crank it. It's not a wrister. He's just kind of a scoop shot. So he's pressing even more because now again he's expected to cash in goals, and it's again I still go back to the whole thing that he just seems to be proverbially squeezing the stick too much, and secondly playing on a line where he's expected to be the finisher, and he's just not.
You know, they've won games that way with him on this line, but like I have sort of mocked it because it's like, well, how long are they going to continue to have him play that way, because it's sort of killing his goal scoring? And so now they've lost. You know, at some point they're going to have to reshuffle the deck. Dave Haxtell had a nice little mini run here, but even he was completely frustrated at the end of this game with that empty netter.
Now, he was
shuffling on his face.
He had all four lines, I think, shuffled in the third period because at that point they were just getting so hemmed in by Dallas that he had to try to shake, you know, sort of, you know, hit the line blender and hit puree, so to speak, and figure out what he was going to do with his lines. And he had, you know, and it's just, yeah, it's a high level of frustration. And considering they played well against St. Louis last night, you know, night before.
Yeah, oh, great game. That was one of
their
best games of the year.
And exactly, had one of their best games of the year. And then coming out back-to-back against a fresh Dallas team, Dallas comes out in this one, and they look rusty and give Philadelphia a lot of space on the ice. But then again, they can suddenly turn on a dime, and they've got such firepower in their lineup that again, Philly was fortunate probably at times to be at the game to end at just 3-1. It could have very well been higher than that. And yeah, this is where they stand right now. And it's that circumstance, again, it's a tough stretch here of games for them that, you know, they need something. And the St. Louis win's a very important one for them that sort of mitigates a little bit of the Dallas game tonight. But now they've got to win the next one here in order to minimize any further damage.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to switch off to, there's going to be like a minute of Team USA talk because, you know, I was pretty vocal about Jeremy Bracco, and he's had 4 points tonight, and he didn't even get invited to camp. He's got a 4-point game. Like, he's well over a point per game. And Kyle Connor is another one who did not get invited to camp, and he's over a point a game in college hockey. And so you just kind of wonder, does this, you know, why does the roster have to be so limited? I'm not saying all these guys have to make the team, but I'm saying they should be invited. They've earned the right to at least be invited and show off what they have. And this is, I guess, what's frustrating to sort of cover that and see that.
No, I hear you on that. And Bracco I like. But I kind of looked at the Team USA preliminary roster. It's still pretty darn, you know, pretty solid one.
Oh, no,
but again,
I'm not,
I guess they figured there was.
Yeah, it's good.
No, it's not. Again, I'm not saying it's. I know you're not saying that, but again, they feel like there's certain circumstances and situations where they don't necessarily want to pull players out of whatever it is that they're in the midst of doing right now, and then if necessary in the future, you know, with certain circumstances, like for example, Vince Dunn getting, you know, being, you know, out for Team Canada, you know, you'll call on them then, and you know hopefully the motivation, the juices flow for the player once they get over and start to play in camp. But, you know, they have, again, a lot like pro teams, they're going to have, or World Cup teams, teams are going to have sort of an idea of what kind of how they, or Olympic teams, they have an idea of how they want to play and how they sort of want to set things up. And there is almost a systematic, system to how they want to do it. Now they want to set their teams up. And I guess the big question comes down to is, whether or not they envision Bracco as being a part of that,
He had 13 points in the under-18s. You know, he was the second leading scorer in the entire tournament behind Austin Matthews. So something tells me
I would have had him in myself. Again, for me, it's me calling it or you calling it. Yeah, we have him in, but we're not in those positions. So
no,
but we can debate it. It makes for good conversation.
It does. Now with Edmonton, this is a nice run for him, but the bad part of this run for Edmonton is it's Anders Nielsen spearheading the run, and is it a little embarrassing that Cam Talbot's on the bench against the Rangers, considering they signed him and paid him like a number one? I kind of think it is.
Well, it probably is for them, but again, we've had this discussion about Talbot before. Well, I think I like Talbot. I think he's more of a swing number one goaltender than a bellwether number one goaltender.
He
sort of can carry the mail. And again, Nielsen's been on a really good run. Nielsen played well, and it's one of those circumstances where it's like you got to play the goaltender who's playing well, and Nielsen's been that. So he's been, he's been excellent for Edmonton. So if it ain't broke, you got to go with what's working, and that's where they're at right now.
Yeah, no question about that. Switching over, we will have a little Board of Governor talk. As far as expansion goes, it's funny, the waters have gotten so muddy. I could tell you five arguments for, I can give you five arguments against. The only thing we know is that the Florida Panthers got a boatload of money that's sort of inexplicable to all of us, but they're crossed off the list of being a team to worry about.
Yeah, especially after the Broward meetings. Yeah, that was pretty much locking everything in for Florida.
Right, yeah. And Phoenix could get locked in, too, if they get this new arena deal, although that hasn't happened yet. But if it does, I said Phoenix. And so after that, you would think it would open the door widely for expansion, and yet there seems to be some movement on the Board of Governors now to sort of pump the brakes.
Gary Bettman said that it was categorically untrue that the league is waiting to see if Seattle is once again the picture. Because I do think deep down they certainly want Seattle in the picture here.
I mean, there's no doubt they do.
What it's coming down to is, and I guess they want Vegas, and I think they want Seattle and Quebec City. I'm wondering with Quebec City if, again, just like with Winnipeg, it's a case where they're waiting for potentially one of the other market teams to sort of and keep them sort
to
of Quebec City
white
in the
flag.
Back pocket.
To, yeah.
What's that? Yeah, exactly. If there's a white
to put
flag
up the white
franchise,
flag.
We just can't. Exactly, and they need to move. I think they want to get the expansion fees from Seattle and Las Vegas, and then if they need to move another team that's not successful out, and get it to Quebec City because there's a brand, there's a arena there, there's a fervor for it. But again, it's
although
I say
people
it's
keep saying they can't get corporate support there, which I find hard to believe. I got
what, in Quebec
right now. I have to take their word for it.
In Quebec City. There could be something to that again, and they do have to sort of look at it much with a jaundiced eye, a little bit the same way that what happened with Atlanta. They tried it once in Atlanta, failed with the Flames. Second time with the Thrashers, utterly failed.
Yeah,
and they want to sort of and again from a business perspective, I understand it. I want to see a team back in Quebec City. I don't want anybody to misconstrue and say I don't want to see like the Nordiques come back. I want to see that happen. It's just, but I get it from a business perspective where there's a little bit of hesitation there from the league's perspective. And again, I know they're saying it's not because of Seattle that they're waiting. I think you and I both have kind of an understanding here that they are waiting for that.
They are. And the weird thing is, Carolina, where they are sort of being patient for a sale, team's only worth like $250 million. It's going to be tough to charge these new teams like $550 million if you have a team that's only worth like $250 million and can't sell. It doesn't help.
That's why I do think that I think there's a decent chance that if a team's going to get relocated, it's going to be Carolina.
I'm still looking at them too.
Because again,
exactly.
And what sort of indicates that to me is that they're going to look at it and say, hey, we already have two teams. There's already two teams in Florida. Tampa's got a solid backing there.
They're solid at this point. Even if
the Panthers
were to leave, they could weather that too.
I think they can weather it because it's going to be interesting and again potentially long term and maybe the smart play for them to let to move Stamkos at a certain point. Although again, he's going to be a UFA, so
yeah,
what they're going to garner in return, I think every team's just going to sit back and go, "We're not giving you anything for him. We'll wait until he gets the free agency, and then we'll go from there."
I love
there,
it's a similar thing like with the St. Louis for Callahan. You get somebody who's also, you know, in that same predicament. Something
precisely.
Really
exactly.
It could happen. I mean.
So.
So we'll see about that.
Yeah, and also they got the any other things in the Borg Government Museum, certainly the executive compensation thing, which I think it's going to probably bother some NHL teams, certainly, that ended up, you know, paying a substantial amount, especially a team like Columbus who they had, you know, they paid for torts, and if Todd Richards doesn't get hired by somebody, they basically got screwed up by January 1, and they basically got screwed over. They're one of the teams that got royally screwed over in this case. And again, in my
but they were desperate, right? They were desperate. It was like they borrowed money from a loan shark, hoping to get back into the playoff picture. So
they haven't yet. And again, they are where they're at right now. And he's and already he's spitting the bit already. He's already throwing players on. He's already burning players in public effigy, basically already. So
well, I'm already wondering how many consecutive games he'll play Curtis McElhinney when he has a really talented kid, Jonas Corposalo, on the bench.
Yeah,
I kind of wonder, will he play him? We'll see.
Yeah, that's a legit question to ask, especially when it comes with John and what he's out. How he's got much more comfort with playing. Veterans, even if they aren't, guys.
I point to Eddie Lack when he wasn't.
Oh yeah,
you know, really known even as much as he is now. He just kept going, Eddie Lack.
He kept going, Eddie Lack, and again with his, if you bash heads with John, you know, we know how this goes with him. You know, he's gonna slug it out with you because he's a little Napoleon and that's what he's gonna do.
There's no question. But the thing is, getting back to the compensation thing, the only thing that's going to affect short term is the Penguins possibly replacing Mike Johnston, because now they might as well just wait until after January 1st, right? Because then they don't have to worry about giving up anything for anybody.
Right, exactly. And I again, that's going to be really interesting to see what they're going to do, because again, the Pens just, they're scuffling. They're a team that's just
they're
having
mess,
their,
man.
You know, they're up, down. And again, their cap situation. I mean, we were talking about earlier about what they had to do with Dupuis, because Dupuis isn't actively retiring. They got to send Olimata to Wheeling, for God's sakes.
Wow.
He's in Wheeling now, and they brought up two other players that I don't know their names. I was like,
just a cautionary tale. Yeah, right. Nobody wants to go to Wheeling. I've driven through there. You don't want to be in Wheeling. You just don't.
It's a good name for a team, though. I always love the name of the team, though, the Nailers.
Yeah. But just no offense to the Wheeling Tourism Bureau, if there is one, but it's a lousy place.
Well, you had fun at Erie, didn't you?
Erie is like a show place compared to Wheeling.
Oof.
Let's just put it out there. So Jeff Skinner now is 2 goals, and Anaheim is down 2-0. Can't really blame Gibson. He's just totally overwhelmed in the crease. This is what's tough for Anaheim, because if you have a bad game or two, it's sort of like you've gone up 3 rungs and then you slip back one. In this league, especially in the West, when you get off to a bad start, it can definitely kill you.
Oh, absolutely. And again, we coming back to where Anaheim certainly sits right now, and we talked about this earlier here, it's just, there's a real hole. And the big thing, again, you look at the Ducks, is, and I come back to it again, they just got it. They got to right the ship on the road. I mean, they're just not a good road team right now. 3-8-1 on the season. That's got to improve.
And this one's a home game, so this is one that they're probably banking on.
No, exactly. This is a home game against Carolina. Again, this is a game where they sort of, as a team, are they taking this game lightly because Carolina's not a particularly good team?
Right.
Well, you're not exactly particularly good yourself right now, so you better go look in the mirror before you make any assumptions about the opponent who you're facing. Because let's face it, if I'm looking at the standings right now, you're at 27 points in 28 games played, and I'm looking at Carolina right now, and they're at 24 points in 28 games played. there's not that much of a difference between the two of you. So really,
no.
You need to look at yourself in the mirror, and if you're assuming that they're just, you know, you're that much better, well, standings say otherwise.
We're going to go probably 2 minutes at overtime, so people should just check back and catch the last little bit. So I want to talk about Carolina for a minute because of the Eric Staal situation. Like, I'm 99.9 that he's definitely getting traded. Now, could he come back in some sort of UFA situation over the summer? Sure. But I'm sure he's getting traded. Now, the issue is that I've watched him pretty closely for weeks, and he is not the Eric Staal of old. Now, maybe he's, you know, needs a new fresh start and all that great stuff that
we
say, but he, like, you know, I saw on a show they said, well, he's physical. He's not physical anymore. He's not hitting people. And he's not dominating games, and he's not winning faceoffs. So he's not really a number one center, even though he plays the part. That's my problem if I'm trading for Eric Staal.
And paid the part, too. But, I mean, it's just he almost has the look of a guy who's sort of like waiting to be moved to sort of spark himself in the circumstance that, things
are way to put it.
Are where they're at right now. They're buried in the standing, 6 points behind Philadelphia. And again, you look at them as a team, there's some elements of Carolina that I do like. I mean, certainly Justin Falk, Noah Hanifin, Skinner, but again, I look at the rest of it and it's just, you know, not particularly good. And again, I'll get a good look at them again on next Tuesday when they come to Philadelphia
to play tonight. So I guess he just had a 1 day trip to Wheeling.
No, okay, cool. So I wasn't able to track on. So they had to probably just with regards to setting that up. And
It's
more of a paper move, which is what I kind of suspected it would be. But again, at the time that I looked at it, I was just like, okay.
Yeah, it's a little crazy. But getting back to it, so like Eric Staal, like, so it's really a risky proposition because, A, you're pretty sure he's a rental, and B, even though he may only be 31, sometimes when guys, everything comes to them young and they, you know, they win early on and then have these kinds of troubles and he has a lot of mileage on him. Let's face it,
he doesn't miss many games.
It could be wearing on him already.
It could be wearing on him. It could be very well almost a similar situation. You know, not quite as bad as what's happened to Vinny LeCavalier. But again, when you come in the league early, they need the age, baby. It's the mileage. And again, he's had a lot of miles on his body. And sort of sometimes when you're in the same sort of situation and locked in and you know the team isn't competitive and you're not, you know the team that around you is not a cup contender, you know, after a while it may cause you to sort of go shuffle through the motions and sort of wait. It's, you know, sort of putting yourself in a waiting pattern. And that's kind of the way Staal, in my mind right now, and seeing Staal, how he looks. So,
All right, well, we're going to end it here. I kind of wish I had a recording of Happy Trails so I could say that and wish Michael Kadire the very best. And come on, I'm trying to be nice here.
If it gets you UNS Cespedes back, what are you complaining about?
No, I'm not. I'm wishing him the best. Is that a complaint?
Okay. Yeah, that was that one was dripping with something, Russ. That Happy Trails. I'm not going to say what it was dripping with.
But yes, it could lead to something else. And so I
congratulations, everybody.
I very much wish him well, and I want to thank him for his retirement.
We had here's our Mets minute.
that was our Mets minute.
That's it. You're getting a Phillies minute next week, you.
There you go.
You really want to get the press? Take care, everybody.